Hey, my name is Dwight Bernier, and I want to welcome you to the Acts 29 Canada podcast. All right. Well, hey, thanks for joining us. Today, we're going to talk about leadership. And this topic is not just about Christian leadership, but the concept really in general. But of course, we'll talk about Christian leadership. But leadership is one of those strange topics that can keep having more books written on it because there's so much to still be discovered. So to talk about the subject today, I've invited the executive director of Acts 29, Brian Howard, to join me. So thanks, Brian, for being on the podcast.
Thanks, Dwight. It's great to be here with you. And I know that you're a good leader, and I've watched your leadership. And I'm excited to talk about this because probably your listeners are involved in leading something.
Yeah, absolutely. So start by telling us about your family and where you live.
So I live in Orange County, California, which is about 60 miles south of Los Angeles. We're famous, if you are not familiar with the area, for things like Disneyland and the beaches and some would say, you know, TV shows and things like that. But it's a community of about 4 million people or so. So it's a large community, Southern California. I've been married to Chandra for 27, going on 28 years here. No, going on 27 years. All right. So that's better get that right.
Well, she might not listen to this, so you can mess it up.
And I've got four kids. My kids are 22, 20, 18, and 16. A couple of them are about to turn those ages. One graduating from college this year, one graduating from high school this year, another in college, another in high school. So we have we've had a pretty full last year with COVID, family quarantines and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, everyone's got to know their family really well. Hey, just a piece of Canadian trivia. What's Canada famous for, Brian? You're telling us about what Southern California is famous for. What do you think of when you think of Canada?
When I think of Canada, I think of mountains, not very many people, police officers that have those broad-brimmed hats.
And they all ride horses.
And then, right, they all ride horses. And then you like to say A after everything. So Canadians like to say, hey, A. So that's, no, I have been to Canada a couple of times, but man, I probably missed on every description I just gave.
So. No, I think it was spot on. It's fun. So you're the executive director of Acts 29. When did you take that over?
It's been a year coming up on 3 weeks from now. So I stepped in as the acting executive director, which is like an interim kind of role, probably 2 months before that, around February of 2020. So I got to step in, and then COVID, welcome COVID, you know, so mid-March. And so really it's been a year that I've been sitting in this seat now, in this role. And that entire year, though, has been a really different kind of year. So this is not a role normally where you sit at a computer and do Zoom calls all day. But that's what a lot of the last year has held, as obviously few of us, if I don't know anybody who's lived a completely normal existence in the last 12 months. But my tenure so far has been a lot of leading from the home and the quarantine and the home office and that sort of thing.
Yeah, man. And we were in France together just as we thought that the world was ending and people weren't going to be let into North America. I think I've spent more time with you in Europe than in North America.
I think it was March 12th when we got out of there last year, and we all ran to the airport, got out, barely made it home, and we haven't left very often since.
It's crazy. It's crazy. Yes, let's meet up in Europe again soon.
I'm in.
So what were you doing before you took over as interim and then now truly executive director?
Well, I'm 50 years old, and so I've had about a 30-year run or so now in the greater ministry world. You know, I'm a disabled veteran, went to Desert Storm, served in the military, and then came into ministry and spent essentially about 10 years in pastoral ministry before I planted a church, went to seminary during that time, planted a church at about 30 years old in the greater Los Angeles area in Southern California, and pastored that church for quite a few years. And then I helped to start Sojourn Network, which is now called Harbor Network. So I was in Louisville for a few years. And then I would say the last 10 years of my life, I have been working with Acts 29 for a lot of years, I was not in Acts 29 for a while as we started what's now Harbor Network, another church planting network, great network, and I have great friends there who continue to lead that. David Owens, the executive director there. So right before I took this role, I had just recently stepped into the U.S. Acts 29 role. I mean, just a couple of months before. And before that, I was just leading a smaller segment of Acts 29, which is 13 states of the West Coast. I would say greater, you know, broader perhaps, kingdom impact. You know, I've spent the last 12 years or so of my life, maybe 14 years, doing a lot of coaching. I've coached thousands probably of leaders at this point, and have really carved out a niche over many, many years of coaching leaders, helping leaders grow. I've done that both in the ministry world. I've done it in the business world, worked with a lot of pastors, a lot of business leaders. And so if I'm self-aware now at 50 years old, I would say I'm pretty clear at what my gifting is and what it's not. And leadership and organizational health is definitely a part of that gift mix in terms of where God has really wired me and grown me and developed me through trial and mistakes and mentoring and all of that.
No, it's really good. I remember our first conversation around coaching, and you just completely geeked out and told me, like, here are the five different ways that people coach. I'm like, wow, this guy really understands what he's doing. So I appreciate it when people geek out in their, you know, specialties. It's fun to get to watch. Well, I know your job really isn't an easy one based on the history of Acts 29, but we're not going to go there today, I don't think. So you've spent a lot of time reading, digesting a lot on leadership. So I'd love to hear what's your favorite book or some of your favorite books or resources on leadership in general?
Okay, now I'm going to start by sounding probably overly spiritual here, but not because I'm trying to win anybody any points, but because I'm being honest. I mean, look, I'm in the Bible every day. So this first 6 months of the year, I'm reading through the whole Bible in the first 6 months. And so I'm basically, you take the 1 year Bible and you make sure you read two sections every day. And so, you know, I've been reading Jeremiah for the last 2 days. So I read 10 chapters of Jeremiah yesterday because I'm working through chronologically the Bible.
And, is that why you look so sad today?
That's why I look sad, and I have such a huge beard, and I'm laying on the ground, you know. So, and I'm
clothed,
saying,
of course.
I'm saying things like, "Not so the wicked," and things like that. Anyways, and then the second half of this year, I take a chapter a day and read that chapter and journal what I'm learning in that. So, so again, at the risk of trying to, you know, sound overly, you know, like I'm just talking only about the Bible, but obviously there's so much wealth and wisdom in the scripture. And so I want to be grounded in the scripture every day. And I am that. And my kids know that. And my wife and daughter and I are all doing a Bible reading plan together. And so, and then, you know, here's what I would say. If I had to just name one book that has been most shaping to me, it's probably Peter Drucker's The Effective Executive. So I probably read 10 Peter Drucker books. Peter Drucker was a believer, probably the greatest leadership thinker of the 20th century, and a book that I think every leader should read. You know, a sort of a modern day maybe iteration of Peter Drucker would be somebody more like Patrick Lencioni. Patrick Lencioni's written a number of good books. I think I've read all of them, honestly. I think he may have a new book out now that I haven't read, but up till the last 2 or 3 years, they're not difficult to read. I've met Patrick Lencioni before. You know, he's big on team building. And so, and then, you know, one more favorite leadership book is The E-Myth Revisited. That's written by Michael Gerber. Now, I'm not listing, you know, all kinds of books on spiritual leadership per se, probably because I have read great books on spiritual leadership in the past. J. Oswald Sanders, John Maxwell's Developing the Leader Within You and the Leaders Around You, things like that. But probably I'm trying to hone in on these are three or four things that right now I would say I'm just consistently encouraged by and am growing as a leader. As I apply those things with an understanding of my standing and position in Christ. And so, you know, at least two of the guys that wrote these books are believers, professing believers, and there's so much good leadership wisdom in these, written by guys who weren't writing necessarily Christian leadership books, they were writing books, perhaps like Tolkien, you know, out of the flow of their worldview. And so these are some books. But, you know, here's what I would say. I would say, read, read, read. I was with my son a couple of days ago, and my son, 22 years old, and he said to me, now again, I don't think he's ever said this to me before. So I thought, oh my goodness, 22 years, first time. He said, Dad, you're really smart. He's said many things before where he did not say those words. He said, how'd you get so smart? Well, first of all, I felt like, hey, finally 22. I always say to my kids, people pay me to tell them what to do, and you won't even do what I tell you to do for free. You know, so I said, Andrew, I read a lot. I read, I study the Bible, I read, I try to read a book every week. This year, I have a goal to read 36 books. And, you know, and so, and in my annual plan, which I write every year, so I read a lot of stuff, but these are three that I would say I love.
No, that's really good. Very helpful. So I can't wait till my kids tell me I'm smart.
It might be a while. They tell you when they're really little, maybe then never at all again. And then if you're lucky, maybe like one time.
You got to record it. Like, say that again. That's good. Okay, so can you tell me about your first example, or one of the first examples of good leadership that you can remember seeing?
Honestly, Dwight, here's what I would say. It's got to be my dad, you know? And so I, a couple of years ago, I was at the Exponential Conference, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, and I was speaking. I've done a couple of breakouts several times at the Exponential Conference, East and West, and they were doing a thing on hero makers. And they said, you know, who made you who you are? And, you know, when I look at and I've had 6 or 8 people that have really impacted my life over the years. But the number one is my dad. And the reason is he was a godly man. He was an example of gentle, humble, yet strong conviction-based leadership. You know, he pastored for 40 years. He's been married to my mom for 50 years. He's still involved in my life. I've been going out during COVID to see them about once a month, because they're up in years at this point. And, you know, he invested in me. I mean, an example of a man who stayed faithful and married to his wife for 54 years and loved his kids, and who still sits and reads his Bible. Just the other day, I thought I need to call my dad and ask him some questions about some of the stuff I'm reading in the Old Testament because of what a good Bible scholar he is. So I would just say, man, I would be remiss to try to find somebody the men who impacted me in my 20s and 30s even, without saying that I'm super thankful that my dad, you know, even at I'm 50 years old, has continued to invest in me. And look, I want to just say, I know that that's really rare. I have lots of really great friends who didn't have. One of my best friends never even knew his dad. And he's a godly man, awesome guy, never even knew his dad. And so I just know how rare that is. And I know that I could have been born into any family, and God chose to allow me to be born into this family for whatever reason, to be invested in by my dad for so many years.
Well, and I love that. And I mean, I have a question about this later on, but that reality that when we think about leadership, we so often think about like, oh, a platform. And when I get in front of people, and we leave home every day to go and be a leader somewhere. But for the normal everyday Christian, like that's where leadership really begins, is in the home. And even the qualifications to be an elder, it's like, if you can't lead your little church, why would we ever let you lead a larger church? So I love that you pulled out your dad as that. That's really good. So that's good leadership. What about one of the first examples of bad leadership that you saw?
Unfortunately, I've seen quite a few. And as I look at the different leaders I've seen throughout life or worked under, alongside, over, you know, I've been in all of those roles, under authority, in partnership, in authority. You know, early on, I worked under two different men who were both immoral, like strong character flaws. They didn't practice what they preached. They were preaching something from the pulpit that they were not living out at home, you know. And so at the same time, what's interesting is in those same contexts, I learn from others oftentimes, you know. So I would say, unfortunately, I've seen quite a few examples of bad leadership, but I also have been, you know, I went to my dad in terms of you asking me the question, but I think even of some of the men that invested in me in my 20s, Bruce Speer, Kent Sparks, people like that, Dave Maddox, Mark Tatlock, men that invested in me in my 20s and early 30s, really good examples of leadership, but I, it, already in my early 20s, you know, I saw narcissistic leadership. I saw leadership that was lacking in character. I saw people that were one way in person and another way in public. And so, unfortunately, I've seen a lot of examples of bad leadership. It's probably the best way to say it.
Yeah, no, I'm sure. What do you think is it that, or one of the things, because I'm sure it's many, but that causes a lead? You talked about a pulpit, so let's just talk about a pastor. Like, what do you think that leads a pastor to preach something on a Sunday morning or Sunday evening and live a drastically different life on Monday morning and throughout the rest of the week?
You know, I don't know if I have a crystal clear objective answer to that. Probably 15 years ago, I had a conversation with a man that I got to know who's written a bunch of books, and he wrote a book on this. It was something like Why Great Men Fall or something like that. And he just released this book. And I had a conversation with him about this that I'll never forget. It was probably 15 years ago. He was a large church pastor from North Carolina. And he said to me, most of these leaders that fall are masters of differentiating. So they differentiate. They have two different worlds. They have the world over here. I'm using my hands over on the left side. If you're listening to this, they have the world over here where they're pastor and mentor and theology. And then they have the world over here, and these two worlds do not collide. So their character is not affecting the way that they lead. And by the way, I'm just going to character issues in leadership. There are also bad leaders who have good character. So just because you love God doesn't mean you're a good leader. So, I can think of, you might just not be a good leader. You haven't learned, you haven't studied it. So from a character perspective, you know, leadership, at least I believe we believe that it should begin with character, particularly spiritual leadership. Now, you know, I would say even in the secular, if we're allowed to use that word, I don't really think there's anything such as secular, right? But even in the sort of non-religious space or non-Christian church space, I would say good leadership begins with character. But it doesn't necessarily end with character, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It does. That's good. So from your experience, because you've worked with all kinds of people, I mean, at one point you were coaching NBA coaches or something, you've worked with CEOs and large ministries and local church leaders. So you've worked with a lot of different leaders. And I have the sense, though I've never been with you, when you're coaching like an NBA, whomever you're coaching from there, that you're any different. You know, I feel like you're Brian Howard no matter where you go, and I've seen you in different environments. From your experience in all those different places, what basic principles make a good, or like Jim Collins would say, great leader?
Yeah, okay, so I think I would say it probably starts with the understanding that a leader is creating culture. I don't know if I would have known this until after 40 years old, okay, or been able to say it that clearly. So a leader is creating culture around himself or herself. Okay, so what basic principles make a good or a great leader? I would start with the understanding that I'm going to reproduce who I am and I'm going to build a culture around me. All right, another thing I would say is that a great leader is constantly learning and growing. I just did a training for pastors a couple of days ago on five reasons that churches stop growing. Okay, now, most people, most pastors in the church world want to say things like, well, our church is not growing because we're in a really difficult community and it's really difficult. This is a really unchurched community. I would actually say there are four or five things to talk about before that. And one of those things would be the skill level of the leader of the church. So a great leader is constantly learning and growing. I'm trying to teach my two sons, 22 and 18 years old, about the value of them continuing to grow and learn. Look, I don't know how many times I've read the Bible, a lot of times. I mean, I read through the Bible several times as a kid. I grew up in a Christian home. And yet every time I read the Bible, I'm rereading a book right now too called Scaling Up that I've read two or three times, because every time I reread something, I'm learning. So a leader is creating culture. A leader is constantly learning and growing. And then this is what I would say. I think I've got three or four things here. Here would be number three is, a leader is looking to develop the others around him or her. and see them thrive. So if Dwight, you are leading me and you're, and I'm under your leadership, then what I would hope you would be doing is you'd be saying, Brian, my role is to really help develop you to thrive in the gifting that God has given you. All right. So that brings me to the next thing, which is a leader is pretty much never the smartest person in the room. Okay. This is a big flaw in leadership is that when a leader thinks that he or she is the smartest person in the room, either you're confused or you haven't gotten good people around you. It's probably both, or you're overestimating your own ability. So maybe this goes to the principle of servant leadership, essentially. So a servant leader, and I would say that crosses contexts, a servant leader is looking to make those serve those around them, helping to see them thrive. Now look in the think about the NBA world, which I know that world a little bit, the basketball world of the United States, you know, the best coaches are creating culture, constantly learning and growing, seeing to help those around them thrive, and generally probably not the smartest person in the room. You know, when you look at these NBA coaching staffs where there are six coaches, the head coach is not necessarily the smartest person of that group of six. He's got other people on that team that are better than him at things. And then when you look at the church world, at the ministry world where you and I both work, Dwight, you know, a really good leader is creating a healthy, humble, prayerful, servant-hearted, gentle culture where we listen to each other, where we don't tolerate abusive patterns and those sorts of things. We're constantly learning and growing. We're looking to develop those around us. You and I are involved in church planting, Dwight. We want to develop people around us and send them to start new churches. And then we don't ever see ourselves as the smartest person in the room.
Yes, I completely agree with that, man. There have been so many times I'm looking around the room and I'm like, how did I get here?
That's a good place because, to be. You should stay there.
yeah, it's good. It's really good. So you talk, I mean, you just gave us a bunch of stuff, which is really, really helpful. But you mentioned like healthy, humble, servant leadership. I'm assuming this is the type of leadership culture that you want to see cultivated within Acts 29. So take everything you just said about what a good culture is and talk to us about how you're getting on with accomplishing that within Acts 29, this global family of church planting churches.
Well, I would say, first of all, it's definitely challenging. It's not insurmountable, but it's challenging because Acts 29 is a large and complex, really multiple organizations, you know? So you've got, Acts 29 exists in 50-something countries and in 30-something languages. Every time I quote the exact number, I'm a little bit off, but in that general range. And so what I would say is that, first of all, I'm understanding that I'm a culture creator in Acts 29. Now, I'm stepping into a pre-existing culture. And so I have to absorb and learn what kinds of things are already going on in the culture. Because look, Dwight, in the beginning of our interview today, you said to me, hey, tell me a little bit about Canada. And I could barely tell you anything. So the reality is for me to act like I really know a lot about Canadian ministry culture would be arrogant on my part. So I have to do a lot of listening and reflecting and not be prideful or arrogant. So I would say the kind of culture that I really pursue. In fact, you know, when an employee comes to work for Acts 29, after 90 days, they review us. So we just this morning, I was in a team meeting and we looked at the 8 people that were onboarded in the last, 6 months or so at their 90-day reviews. What did they say about us? What did they say about the culture? And so we're asking questions to make sure that in Acts 29, we are cultivating and pursuing a gentle and humble, yet a strong convictional culture. Look, to be gentle and humble doesn't mean that I blow wherever the wind goes. To be the not the smartest person in the room doesn't mean that I can't step up at times and say, hey, we have got to move this direction convictionally. But I really want to see, look, Acts 29 is a network, is what it is. And it's actually multiple networks. It's really a giant global community or family of multiple networks. And so I think what the kind of culture we want to build and create, first of all, we want to start churches, right? So that's a big part of what we want to do. And then we want gentle, humble, character-driven, strong leaders, where we're looking to develop the God-given skill sets of those around us. And so we're obviously doing that in quite a challenging cultural moment right now. Not only are we coming out of COVID, but in the United States where I live, we've got quite a bit of tension and trauma around political issues and issues of justice. And we've got huge challenges in front of us. But if by God's grace, I'm still allowed to sit in this seat in 5 years, and I do so at our board's, you know, at our board's pleasure, they decide if I do or I don't, then I know that that's the kind of culture we will be building in Acts 29.
Yeah, that's really good. So good. So there's a global reality to what we're doing. So given the global nature of Acts 29, what issues have you bumped into as you attempt to lead people from very different cultures where the values are not necessarily the same? So, I mean, for example, leadership in Africa is not the same as it is in India, as the same as it is in Australia, and it's not the same as the U.S. So what are the things that you're bumping into as you're leading globally from Southern California?
One of the things the main thing I'm bumping into is how little I know and how good it is for me to admit that. So, I mean, I think The reality is what does it look like to lead a global network when you're talking to Robert Manda, who's pastoring a church of 1,000 people in Malawi, I've never even been to Malawi before. I hope to visit after COVID and see Robert's ministry. I've never seen your ministry, Dwight. You know, I've never been to South Africa. Now, I have traveled quite a bit. I've been in quite a few contexts, but I think even going to England or dealing with English speaking Europe, it's a completely different culture. And so What I've learned is that I have to do a lot of listening and a lot of asking and a lot of relying on local leaders. And so for me to roll into some culture and feel like, hey, we're doing this and this and this, I mean, I think they call that colonialism is what I think that it's called, you know, but, and I don't, you know, all jokes aside, that's a serious issue. You know, I think it would be very arrogant for me to lead like that. And I think, you know, look, I was born in the United States. I'm an American citizen. I've spent over a year outside of the United States in my life, probably a year and 3 months or so total. And so I have experienced quite a bit in terms of different cultures where a lot of folks who live in the U.S. never leave even the state that they live in or something, you know. But what I have learned, the more I travel, the more I realize you cannot superimpose a way of doing ministry in Southern California even over what it would look like in Chicago, Illinois, or Montreal, Canada, let alone South Africa or India. And so I think the key takeaway I would want those who are listening to us dialogue around this today to take is, man, we've got to listen. I remember going in at 39 years old and taking a role at Sojourn Church in Louisville. And I moved from Los Angeles to Louisville, Kentucky, which is a very, very different place. I don't think I truly understood this when I got there. I got there and realized, hey, just because I was successful-ish over here doesn't mean I just get to bring that into this context. I come in and I listen and I learn and I serve and I develop the people around me.
Yeah, that's really good. Yeah. Asking why a lot is so important. You know, why do you do this way? And not a judgmental thing, but Canada often just gets lumped in with the U.S. And so I'll talk to people that want to help out and do certain different things. And they're like, well, we're doing this down in Florida, so we'll just come up and run the same thing. I'm like, well, I don't know that that's going to be the best way to lead here. You know, maybe by starting saying, what do you do? You know, how could we help you do that better? Is there a way we could do that? Or should we just focus on something different? So,
and Dwight, before you move on, let me just say this too. I mean, the nuances of even culture of towns that are a mile away or an hour away from each other are oftentimes very different. You can drive from Los Angeles, California, an hour and a half away to Bakersfield, California, and the cultural systems are completely different. And so you're absolutely right. Not only can we not take Florida to Canada, we probably can't even take Florida two states over and do the same thing. And so in a global context with church planting, in a global context, ministry, in a global context, absolutely, the nuances of listening to local leaders and following local leaders who are living in that context, which is a different model of missions than has sometimes been historically carried out in the history of Christianity.
Sure, and some people even, you know, they're glad to let you come do the thing because they know that there's money attached to it. So if I let you come do your little soccer thing that you want to do, then you're going to give us 20 grand and we'll laugh about the soccer thing after you leave and we'll appreciate the money. And so so often those things are tied together, and I've seen that, and it's frustrating.
Yeah, and we should never let an American teach anybody to play soccer anyways. Anyways, all right.
Americans can come and teach hockey in Canada. We'd love to learn. Well, what accountability for you as a leader? What accountability is in place for you to lead and to know that, man, if Brian Howard goes off the rails, someone is going to do something about it? What accountability do you have?
Well, professionally, I would say I have multiple layers of accountability. Personally, I have a family full of adults, you know, who live with me. So I have a family and local community and local Christian friends and local church, you know. In terms of as a public leader in the Acts 29 sphere, first of all, I am thoroughly under the board of Acts 29. So, for example, a week from this Monday, perhaps, I'm not sure when we will air this podcast, but maybe by the time you listen to this, I will have already had an Acts 29 board meeting where I am responsible to show up with a clear path for exactly what we've done and accomplished and how I treat people and how our organization is being led. And so I'm accountable to the Acts 29 board. I would say I'm accountable to the people around me. So the people that I work closely with Doug Logan and with Philip Moore and with the five regional directors in the United States. So I'm accountable to them. So, man, it would be very difficult. And I would be, if there were 20 other people on the call with us today, I think they would agree. They would say the same thing. It'd be very difficult for me to go off the rails and not be accountable widely in multiple structures and systems. And I think the truth is, Dwight, is I love that accountability. I meet with Matt Chandler every Wednesday. I work quite closely with Matt. And I love the accountability of showing up and saying, I mean, there's a safety in it. There's a safety mm-hmm. in knowing, hey, the world doesn't rise and fall with me. I'm going to do the best I know, but I'm accountable to do a good, solid job. I'm accountable to live a life of character. I'm accountable to live, to be who I say I am.
Yeah, that's really good and really helpful. And I think what you said is spot on, that when there's good accountability, we feel safe. We feel very, very safe. You're free to make mistakes even, right? Because we know that people are going to help shepherd us into good places. So let's wrap up our time with a few like practical things. You talked about your dad. You are a dad. You've been in your house for quite a while. What does it take to lead in a house? What does it take to be a leader in the home?
Look, I would say the first thing that it takes to be a leader in the home is presence. You know, presence. And I say presence over productivity is what I'm after there. So 21 years or so ago, I wrote a life plan under the guidance of a coach. And I made the decision to be at home at least 5 nights a week and have dinner with my family 5 nights a week. And my son's now 22 years old. And I said no to a lot of things along the way in order to be present with my family. You know, other than being on a podcast interview like this, if one of my kids calls, I'm picking up the phone and I'm answering no matter what. So a long-term presence. You know, last week was our kids' spring break. We have that here where I live. And we spent the week together as a family, you know. So presence is really, really important because when I look at the example that my dad brought, what he brought ultimately was an example of presence in our home. And then, look, I would just say faithfulness over the long haul. It's just showing up every day and being a dad. Loving my wife, staying faithful to my wife, loving my kids, apologizing to my kids. One of the things I've had to learn as my kids have gotten older is that there are times when I have to apologize. I just apologized to my 22-year-old son 3 days ago. He had a job interview. It was a really good job. He's searching for jobs because he's graduating from college in 4 weeks or so, 3 weeks maybe. And, you know, he had a job interview and And after he got done, he said, "Dad, I don't think I'm going to take this job," and gave me some reasons why. And I basically kind of lectured him just for maybe 5 minutes and said, "Man, I think you maybe you just don't want to work hard. You really should take." And then I realized, no, this is his. I came back and apologized to him 30 minutes later. I said, "Hey, this was, I shouldn't have said that. I didn't yell at him or swear at him, or I just felt like my kids need to see me apologizing to them as well." So I would say, look, be present, faithfulness over the long haul, show up every day. There's no magic. It's day in and day out.
Yeah, that's so good. And that's freeing. It's freeing in a sense, because some of us feel like, well, if I don't do the right Bible study and teach my kid Greek, you know, by the time they're seven and teach them all these things, like they're going to be useless. And I think you're absolutely right. And even the present thing, just because someone is physically present doesn't mean that they're present. Right. And I remember Jonathan Dodson, you know, spending time in our home, and my kids were really, really young. And he just said, "Hey, you're home. That's so cool. But I just noticed that you're not really present, you know, with them." And that spoke massively. So putting phones away, shutting things down, doing whatever you need to do to make sure you can actually be there with them is huge. What about the workplace? Someone doesn't have CEO title. They're a worker, you know, they're doing a vocation that God has given them to do. How can they be a good leader in the workplace?
You know, here's what I would say. If any of you listening today have ever read any good books on theology of vocation, Pastor Tim Keller wrote a great book called Every Good Endeavor. I wrote read another book, I think, called Work Matters. Here's the number one thing I would say to you. Show up and do your job excellently. All right. So some Christians feel like the way that I'm a Christian in the workplace is that I wear my Jesus t-shirt and I carry the biggest Bible I could possibly carry. And I have 12 like packs of Testaments. They used to sell those at Christian bookstores, little mints that were called Testaments. You know, they were wrapped in Bible verses. And I only eat at restaurants that serve Christian causes. You know, what I would say is be the best. Do your job excellently. Show up and do your job excellently. Work hard to the glory of God. All right. So that's where it starts. Second, look to serve and love those around you. So if I work at a coffee shop and there are 20 employees there, what should I do? Show up on time, work hard, do my job excellently. Second, look to serve and work hard. Look to serve and love those around me. I remember a friend of mine years ago teaching me location, vocation, recreation. You know, what does it look like to live on mission? Vocation, what does that mean? If God is sovereign enough to put me in a particular workplace, is he not sovereign enough to stir the hearts of the people around me? So as you're working really hard and as you're loving the people around you, just serving them and building relationships with them, and if everybody's going out to lunch, go with them and hang with that group of people. And then look for opportunities to build friendships, because God's going to use those. God will use you if you are faithful in your workplace.
Yeah, that's good. That's really good. I remember someone telling me, "Oh, yeah, I had a great Bible study today by myself in the lunchroom." I'm like, you were by yourself in the lunchroom?
Yeah.
I'm like, were there people around? They're like, yeah. And they know I'm a Christian because I'm reading my Bible at lunch. I'm like, why don't you get up earlier in the morning, read your Bible then, and be present with these people and,
exactly.
And ask why? Like, what are you doing? What are you interested in? How can I, like you said, how can I serve you? But the Lord's put us there in that workplace to be very, very intentional.
Excellent, yeah.
That's good. All right, if someone's listening and has been under an unhealthy leader, because that happens, what steps can they take toward health? Or rather, I asked the question wrong. If someone is listening and has been an unhealthy leader, what steps can they take toward health?
Well, if you have been an unhealthy leader, I think my first question would be, how do you know that? Do you know that because you know that your character's not good, that you're not who you say you are? Well, then I would say address that right away. And there probably needs to be somebody that you talk to about that. If you're saying, hey, I'm not a healthy leader, who are you accountable to? Like, don't keep that secret going. Own that. And figure out, what do I need to do? So if you're not a healthy leader in terms of character, then I would say you may need to step out and get healthy. You may need to go admit some things. You may need to go have some conversations. If you're an unhealthy leader because you don't have good patterns of personal health in your life, well, get some good accountability and develop those patterns. If you're an unhealthy leader because you just don't understand leadership, then study leadership and become a better leader. Get someone, find someone to mentor you or coach you or help teach you what it looks like to be a good leader. I think that the number one thing that stands out to me here, Dwight, is don't stay an unhealthy leader. Sure. Like if you just forget the first minute that I said there and just don't stay an unhealthy leader, what steps do you need to take? And it all depends on what kind of unhealth you're dealing with.
Yeah, that's great. So now the question that I asked previously, what about someone who's being led by an unhealthy leader? You realize like, man, this guy or this woman is a joke. Like they're all broken. How do you continue to work under that unhealth? What advice would you have?
I think this is an issue of context because, for example, what if you're in the military and you work under an unhealthy leader? Well, sorry, you're still in the military. So you're going to
hurt my feelings.
Exactly. You're going to have to learn to exist in that situation. What if you're in the workplace and you work under an unhealthy leader? God does not guarantee us that we get to work under healthy leaders. We have lots of examples in the Bible, namely of prophets who work under unhealthy leaders. I mean, I've been reading all those texts right in the Old Testament. And so just because you work under an unhealthy leader doesn't mean that you necessarily get to leave that. Now, it all depends on your context, okay? Now, in a church world, perhaps it's a bit different, you know? So if you're under an unhealthy leader, how do you know that? What would that look like? Now, I have a little thing here that I think it's a good thing for you to write down. So grab a pen and write this down. It's a thing I use in the coaching world a lot. It's live with it, change it, or leave it. All right, when something is not working well, all right, I'm not talking about your marriage or parenting. That does not apply here. Those are commitments, right? I'm talking about maybe a role, a ministry, a job. If something is not working well, first you ask yourself, can I live with it? And by the way, sometimes we can live with things, right? So sometimes you need to live with something and go, this is the role that God's given me. I'm going to live with it. Nothing's ever going to be perfect. Most of us are never going to have that dream job that they talk about on TV, you know?
Yeah.
If you can't live with it, ask, can I change it? Now, sometimes changing it means changing you. I change the way I'm interacting. I need to be more patient. I need to be more godly in this situation. Sometimes you need to have some conversations with that unhealthy leader. Hey, I see these huge patterns of unhealth. I really want to encourage you we need to work on this. And you're trying to change it. If you can't change it, you go back again and say, can I live with it? All right, can I live with it? I've tried to change it. If you can't live with it and you can't change it, then sometimes you need to leave it. Now, I want to be very careful to not say that too sort of formulaically. It's not a real word, but you get my point.
You can just make it up on this podcast.
That. Formulaically, that's a word we'll use. I think that's a Canadian word. It's what I read one time in a Canadian. Nah, I can't even carry that on any further. See, I'm not very smart when it comes to Canadian culture, but here's what I would say is I would just say, you can't just apply this across the board. These are issues of prayer, wisdom, community. We make decisions in community with those that we're living in community with. And so, a big part of my advice to you would be, don't go it alone just because I'm working under this person. I'm making this decision. I think live with it, change it, and leave it is a process that you go through over a course of time in a community with wise folks around you that are giving you wise and godly advice.
That's so good. Well, man, I have one final question. Before that, though, you just said something a while ago that's been bothering me, and you just said that the NBA in the U.S., we do have a team up here. You know, those Toronto Raptors, we did win one of those championship things.
You do have some of the best players in the world, Fred Van Fleet. Yes, is he still there? Anyways, who knows?
Yeah, once we get into NBA, I don't really know all that much. I know Leonard left, and that kind of, I left with him in a sense.
Hey, so. I'm sorry, Canadians. I love your basketball team. I love your country. I need to come visit. Please invite me. Seems super beautiful when I see it on TV.
It's going to be exciting. So right. last question is, what is your hope for the future of Acts 29?
Man, that's a great question, Dwight. I think my hope is that we would see churches planted across the globe, but not just churches, that we would be an extraordinarily healthy network of multiplying churches. So we have healthy multiplying churches. Now we have 700-ish churches now. It might be a little under, a little over. In the U.S., there are just under 500 churches, I believe, in the U.S. I'm not obsessed about doubling in size from 500 to 1,000 or 700 to 1,400. I think I'm more obsessed about just continuing to make healthy forward progress as God would give us opportunity. And so right now we have tremendous opportunity in Brazil, in Latin America, in South Africa, in East Africa, in the United States as well, in Canada. And so I would like to see healthy growth, healthy multiplying churches. And then I would love to see us be known for things that we have not always been known for. And some of it's not super fair because it's old, you know, but I hope that as we look 5 years from now, we look back and we've seen the inward culture is gentle and humble and godly and empowering, and God has given us opportunity to see many more churches planted.
Man, that's my hope. That's my hope, is that we would see, I mean, my prayer, I know Adam Ramsey's praying it, is this global revival that we would just get to be a part of, right? That God would allow for that to happen. So, man, Brian, thanks so much for giving. It's 46 minutes. I said 35, we went 46, and I wish we could keep going. I had more questions I had to throw out, but really appreciate you. What would be some resources that that people could go to continue growing as leaders?
You know, okay, so again, I'm going to say, make sure that you're reading the Bible. There probably is no better leadership book than the book of Proverbs. Yeah, yeah. Make sure you're reading the Bible. I would definitely push you toward reading Peter Drucker's Effective Executive, Patrick Lencioni's work. I have not read Paul Tripp's new book, Lead, but I have it on my shelf here to read.
So it's good.
I hear that's good, so I'm going to read it's that good. Book. You know, so I would say just read a lot of things. Read a lot of things. Read. I've got a whole list of books that I want to read this year. I'm in the middle of Rebecca McLaughlin's book right now, you know, on confronting Christianity. So, and Carl Truman's book, I'm reading that right now as well. So keep reading. And if you read a lot of things, you're going to grow as a leader.
That's good. Well, thanks so much, Brian. And thanks for listening today. I hope that this is really helpful. And remember, this is really a podcast for theological clarity, cultural engagement, missional innovation. We're hoping to contribute toward the Canadian conversation around those things. So thanks for joining and have a great rest of your day. Thanks so much for joining us today. I really hope that you appreciated the content that you heard. And as you're on your way out, would you do a few things? Number one, would you subscribe? That'll make sure that you get all the new content that Acts 29 Canada is putting out delivered directly to you. Second, would you give us a 5-star rating? That'll just help us to get noticed and help this content get out to people faster. And third, would you share this information with anyone that you think will benefit from it? Again, thanks so much for listening and have a great day.